Hi, I'm Jake Frankel, and this is the Local Matters News Podcast here at Mountain Express. Joining me is senior news reporter David Forbes. And David, you did the cover story this week on Stand Against Racism, which is the local version of a national event. And what is the significance of it this year?
Well, this event is put on by the YWCA, and it involves a number of participating organizations from around the community. It started in New Jersey and in 07, and then last year kind of spread around the country. Asheville had a version of this last year. The big difference this year and why it's kind of vaulted to some prominence is Asheville has the most groups signed up of any city in the country to participate in this event. And it's a spectrum from small businesses and individual activists and organizations on up to like Mission Hospitals, the city of Asheville, Buncombe County. And it's closing in on 150. They're still doing some sign-ups right now, actually. So,
do you have a sense of why so many diverse organizations and people are wanting to be involved with this?
Well, it's kind of an interesting topic, and one the story goes into in some depth. The coordinators of the project said that there were two factors they kind of emphasized. One was organization. They said that a lot of the groups, you know, everything from the Asheville Chamber to, you know, some of the established business and governments down to people who've worked with these issues for a long time, all kind of work together to market this, to collaborate, to get to make it easy for groups to sign up, easy to contact, easy to plan events. And also, I spoke with the project coordinator, Catherine Liss, who's worked with Building Bridges for many years here, and she said that it seemed like there was a sense that it's time to address some of Asheville's underlying racial issues. There is a perception that the city in many ways is still de facto segregated, that there isn't, you know, and as she said, you know, a question she gets all the time is, where are black people downtown? And while that certainly changed from, you know, 10, 20 years ago, there's a perception that it's time to address it a little more openly.
Mm-hmm. And did the organizers talk much about how they hope all of these events will go about at addressing issues? What are the goals here? Is it a fundraiser?
Well, no, not specifically. It's basically an awareness raiser. And the hope is that by having this many groups across this many spectrums, that whoever goes to work during this upcoming week, wherever they are, is going to have an opportunity to participate in some of these events. And, you know, and some of them, like the YMI Center is doing for small businesses, their employees and are coming in, and, you know, individuals are coming in and just having group discussions, and there's some information presentations going on. The city is conducting tours for city and county employees of that downtown area, kind of telling them about, things like where a lot of black neighborhoods used to be and aren't anymore, kind of telling them about how the various minority groups fit into the city's history, including immigrants. And, you know, there are religious services on Sunday. Basically, the goal, according to the organizers, is to raise this to prominence around the city from all kind of walks of life, all different sectors of Asheville, and make it something people are talking about and addressing and bringing up in public.
Another thing people have been talking about a lot this week is the resignation of Asheville City's Police Chief Hogan, and I know you've been following that story. What led him to resign?
Well, it's interesting because the city, which put this release out at the announcement of his departure, he's retiring, out at 4:59 p.m. on Monday. And the release, you know, just said he's retiring. It credited him with bringing, you know, an increased degree of professionalism, better equipment, better training to the Asheville Police Department. He took over for former Chief Will Anarino in 2004, and he's been the police chief ever since. However, they wished him well. They promised that there will be an interim named by the end of the month, and so it was kind of a standard sort of retirement thing. What that release does not mention was that Hogan had been under a lot of fire lately, a lot of controversy about kind of two key matters. The first was a State Bureau of Investigation closing the APD evidence room when some drugs were found to be missing. And it later emerged that a partial audit of the evidence room when the previous property manager of it had resigned very suddenly, that had turned up 115 missing pieces of evidence. And this is not even the full a full audit, which is what they're doing now. Mm-hmm. That's huge. That's a lot. And their guns, drugs, money, all gone. They could not account for them. And the district attorney, Ron Moore, was very angry with Hogan. And publicly, he released a lot of information about this and publicly delayed a bunch of cases that involve evidence from the APD. And publicly, at a city council, at their last city council meeting, targeted the APD's leadership for criticism. He said that he had not been properly informed. Hogan, meanwhile, had said in his defense that it was one individual, and while he didn't name one, the previous property manager had been under investigative suspension before he left in February, who had lost their moral compass. And the second matter was that the city settled for a total of $52,100, a sexual harassment lawsuit brought by former APD officer Sherry Bird, and it was against her former superior, Sergeant Eric Laufer. Former Sergeant Eric Laufer. Laufer is still employed with the police department, and when Express broke that story, that he was still employed after the lawsuit had been settled, then there was some public criticism of Hogan because of that.
Well, he originally got into trouble for sending out what seemed like some extremely inappropriate text messages.
Yes,
right?
And I won't repeat the content here. They're available in our reporting on our website. But yes, he and his defense and the city's defense admitted that he did in fact send these text messages that were sexually explicit and racially offensive.
But he hasn't been affected, as far as you know, by Hogan's resignation, has he? Or has his employment situation
not as far as we know yet. Yeah. You know, Hogan's resignation will be effective on May 13th. Mm-hmm. By that point, he will name a interim police chief, which will probably be one of the captains. Mm-hmm. There are four in the APD currently, and the city manager, Gary Jackson, is promising there will be a competitive search, there will be nationwide, and that there will be a lot of opportunities for community input. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll be keeping us informed as it develops.
So just kind of switch roles for a second, I guess I'll play interviewer for a bit here. You covered the county commissioner meeting this week, Jake, and I understand some fairly interesting stuff came out of that.
Yeah, one of the most interesting developments that came from the meeting, David, was that they voted 3-1 to allow asphalt plants to be built in employment zoning districts in addition to the open use districts where they could have been built previously. The vote was 3-1 with Chair David Gant opposed and Bill Stanley absent due to sickness. Holly Jones kind of hedged a little bit, but she decided to vote for this largely because of what she said, the safeguards that will be required for the asphalt plants to be built in both districts. Mm-hmm. Before this, there really were no specific guidelines to where asphalt plants could be built, even in open use districts.
So she was saying there's kind of like a balance now.
She was saying that at least now we have some safeguards in place. Mm-hmm. Although it does open them up to being able to be built in more places. Now this,
why asphalt plants?
Well, it's interesting. This came about because a few months ago, WNC Pallet Company requested a zoning change for some land they own along Smoky Park Highway in Candler because they wanted to build an asphalt plant, but it was zoned employment district. And the county commissioner said, well, we're not going to rezone it, but they instructed staff to take a look at the asphalt plant construction policy. And staff came back with this plan. So we know that this does open the door for at least one more asphalt plant to be built in Buncombe County. And that was another reason why Gant voted against it. He said, this to me seems too much like we're just doing it for one business interest. And he said that
tail's wagging the dog.
He said I don't think that's ever good policy. But on the other side of it, Jones said, well, at least now we've got some specific guidelines in place, and some of those include that no asphalt plants can be built within a half a mile of any medical facility, school, or park. They're going to have to maintain buffer strips along the property lines, and they're going to have to be located in areas that, quote-unquote, have sufficient access to a major highway so as to minimize truck travel through residential neighborhoods.
Okay. So what else came out of that meeting?
URTV producers were there in force, and this is an ongoing story, as you know. The WNC Media Center, which is the nonprofit organization that runs the public access channel URTV, announced a few weeks ago that they were going to be shutting down operations on April 30th due to funding problems, which they largely place blame on the county government for not giving them money that they say they're legally supposed to be given.
And as we know, this is their claim, and this is for even a possible lawsuit.
Absolutely. Well, that was one of the things that came from the meeting was for the first time they actually threatened legal action in a press release they circulated to the audience and in the comments from the vice president of the URTV board, Bob Horn. They demanded to be given the money that they feel they're owed from the county. In response, David Gant said that, well, we feel like we're operating by the law here, but we certainly want to double check everything. Mm-hmm. And he instructed the county attorney Michael Frew to draft a legal memo with the county's position on that, and that's supposed to be out to the, and available to the public any time now. Mm-hmm. Although it's not quite yet.
So even if they pursue this legal battle, is URTV shutting down at the end of the month?
It's still in question. Now they're saying technically they are not going to shut down on April 30th as of the most recent press release, which was released at the commissioner meeting. I've talked to some of the folks over there, and it's hard to see practically how this is going to play out. They might not actually be, sounds like, operating for producers to be able to use the facility starting April 30th, but they're trying to maintain their status as a functioning organization so that they can proceed with any legal actions.
Okay. But, for the producers, the people who want to go in and guess they made URTV, it would be shut down by that point.
It's still in question. Okay. These are just, I think they're still in the process of working it out, and of course that's only a week away from today, so we'll have to see what happens.
There's been a history of controversy in the past 2 years, both between disputes from URTV producers within it over the management, and now it seems like between the county and URTV over what level of funding they're owed.
There absolutely has been. There's been a lot of accusations from disgruntled former producers and board members that current producers and board members say are really unfounded, and some of them say that they've been libelous. And of course, there's been ongoing issues with the city. They're looking into auditing the equipment to account for it. They're already taking steps.
Yes.
Looking ahead to the future, if it does shut down, what will happen of all the investment? And the county is looking in that direction as well. So we're definitely going to keep a close eye on things and see how this plays out and continue to report on it.
So, that's quite a lot. You have zoning, you have the fate of Asheville's public access channel. And of course, asphalt plants are one of those controversial developments, types of development you can build. Anything else come out of the commissioner's
meeting? Sure, yeah, there was another really important item of business they covered as well. They voted unanimously to allocate around $1.2 million in next year's budget to help fund conservation easement requests in the county that will help protect roughly 1,600 acres of land from development. Land conservation has been a huge issue for the commissioners for a long time. David Gant says it's one of the top priorities, and they were all extremely, extremely enthusiastic in their support for this.
Okay. Well, this has been a trend for years. They've tried to increase the amount of easements and the money they give to them for some time. Mm-hmm. And what do easements exactly do? Not everyone might be familiar with that.
Sure. They provide protections to land from development, although they do not, it still is privately owned land. Mm-hmm. The county is not buying this land. And all of these requests were from the owners of this land. It's all voluntary. And David Camp made a point to mention that this is not the county asserting any power over this land. This is the county providing to support to private landowners to cover some of the costs. A lot of landowners,
legal costs.
A lot of landowners want to preserve their land from development, but there's a lot of economic incentives, oftentimes, for them to sell it, and this offsets some of the pressures to develop it, and it also offsets some of the legal costs in going about putting some protections on this land. The land, though, is not necessarily going to be untouched wilderness. A lot of this land is still going to be used for farming and considered other low impact use.
Well, thank you very much, Jake, for that informative report. I'm David Forbes, senior news reporter with Express.
And this has been Jake Frankel, reporter with Express. Thanks so much for listening to Local Matters. We'll be right back.